numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, DK Network. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside. Live from Bar Canada at the D here, downtown Las Vegas. On the show today, a lot of baseball. Mark Borchardt, Paul Spohr. We'll talk college football because we didn't get a chance to do so yesterday during Guessing Lines with Pete Futak. And, of course, we'll talk to Drew Dinsick about the NFL, all things NFL. Which, did something happen last night that I should know about, Kelly? Anything go on?
No, I went out to dinner.
Oh.
Monday Night Football, oh. Jets, Bills.
Interesting.
I saw the Jets win, so.
Jets 22, Bills 16 in overtime. An improbable win, of course, overridden everything, marred by Aaron Rodgers' injury, four plays into his Jets career. So as Joe Buck said, I've used this phrase on this show before in similar circumstances, a Pyrrhic victory for the New York Jets. Here's what head coach Robert Saleh had to say about that injury after the game. Well, there you go. The speculation is, of course, that Aaron Rodgers has ruptured his Achilles tendon. We will find out today via MRI. Now, Kelly, whenever this happens, whenever some athlete goes down, it's a little bit of a cottage industry that I get on Twitter because if you've listened to this show over the years, you know that I have ruptured two Achilles. Not one, but two. Did so 23 years apart. There's a few things that happen. When you rupture your Achilles, and by the way, I was able to call, you know, Ryan Howard's Achilles injury, Kevin Durant's Achilles injury before they allowed for it to be an Achilles injury. Obviously, Kobe Bryant's as well. This one last night. First of all, there's a few things that happen when you rupture your Achilles. Once you do one, you live in fear of rupturing the other. That's what happened to me 23 years later. The other thing that it gives you a sixth sense about is being able to spot it in someone else. And last night, physically, I wasn't able to with Aaron Rodgers' leg. I know a lot of people are like, oh, we saw the recoil. First of all, I don't think I was looking at the right leg, the correct leg half the time. The boot ended up on the left leg, so I think I was looking at the right for a while. So the people who said they saw a recoil, I didn't see it quite like I did with KD, obviously. Aaron Rodgers not wearing shorts either. But the face. If you've ruptured your Achilles, the first time you do so, you are so confused because you realize you can't walk. After all, your foot is detached from the rest of your leg. But there's no pain. The body goes numb. It protects you. The human body's an amazing thing. It protects you from what otherwise would be unbearable pain. So that really, more than anything for me, was the tell. We'll have David Chow on later on the show to discuss this as well, along with the Travis Kelce injury and beyond. But that was really it for you know, the point of the game that marred everything that happened after that. It was sort of a pall over this game as the Jets were forced to go with Zach Wilson the rest of the game, and looks like, at least in Robert Saleh's words, that they'll try to go with Zach Wilson from here on out. Yes, they will pick up a quarterback, but as you can imagine, everything changed betting-wise. I know yesterday for the Jets at Dallas Week 2 game, I guess Dallas minus 4.5. What was it, 4 or 3 yesterday instead? I guessed a little high on that.
Yeah, we got to 3. I think it was 3.5.
And then I was asked after, you know, Will Hill, Felica and I were, what's going to be the spread in this upcoming game now with it being Zach Wilson and not Aaron Rodgers? And I said 10. Instead, it's 7.5 we're seeing in this game. The Cowboys hosting the Jets in week number 2. Obviously, all the futures changed as well. Jets division odds go from plus 250 to roughly 6-1. Of course, there's also the matter of the other markets as well, as Bill Ady talked about in the newsletter, the VSiN newsletter this morning. Super Bowl odds from 16-1 to 60-1. You get the idea. A season that was so hopeful for so many Jets fans, the entire fan base. This is finally the year. Well, another cruel sort of twist that happens to the Jets. Now, they do win the football game. So in their worst moment, the Jets showed a lot of soul in this. And so give them credit for that. Again, a gauntlet of a schedule the first 6 weeks of the season. And the Jets do get it done 22-16. We'll talk to Drew about the implications, what he thought with the Bills as well, because that's a whole nother subject. I do want to point out one thing that happened in this game last night, Kelly, that amidst all of it, amidst the injury, amidst the amazing touchdown catch by Garrett Wilson by the Jets that tied the game up at 13 apiece in the fourth quarter. A play where Garrett Wilson took his right hand across his body, right? Crossed his body against Tre'Davious White with his right hand, tipped it back to the right side of his body, somehow regained possession as he fell to the ground. Joe Buck went crazy. That's the most crazy I've seen Joe Buck go since Randy Moss took down his pants so many years ago. A disgusting act.
I forgot he did go crazy.
I think you'll be okay, Joe. I think you'll be okay. But amidst the amazing, you know, punt return for the win in overtime, there was something that happened in the third quarter that neither Buck nor Aikman seized on, which I thought was sort of broadcasting malpractice that might have been as key as anything in that football game to give the Jets the win. Now, a lot of people can say, oh, well, you know, early in the game, fourth and two, they decided to settle for a Zuerlein chip shot field goal. I don't have a problem with that because at that point you knew it was Wilson, might as well take the points. But third quarter, and I wonder if anybody else sort of seized on this, third quarter, the Jets are, at this point, they're down in the game. What's the score at this point? 10-3. So early third quarter, 8:59 left. 13-6 at this point, pardon me. 13-6. No, 13-3. Let me get this right. 13-3. It's early third quarter. 11-play drive. It's 3rd and 13 at the Buffalo 25. 3rd and 13, yes, at the Buffalo 25. And there's an offensive pass interference call on Stephon Diggs. And the Buffalo Bills decide to decline that penalty. And they give Greg Zuerlein a 43-yard field goal attempt, which he sinks. Now, that's a 10-yard penalty. Sure, could they have converted after that? Yes.
Right.
But let's say they don't advance the ball. That's a 53-yard field goal. Could Zuerlein have made that? Of course he could have.
Yeah.
But the notion that they did, that they decided so quickly to decline that penalty and give Zuerlein and the Jets the 3 points made no sense to me at the time, and neither Buck nor Aikman mentioned it. That could have been, we'll never know, that could have been the difference in the ball game.
So when they threw that flag, immediately I started wondering, okay, what do you do here? And like you said, the call was so quick.
So it, nonchalant, sure they're going to decline this.
It surprised me how quick it was. I don't have a problem with the call.
Oh, I do.
I don't have a problem with the call.
I do. Tremendously. Tremendously. How do you concede? You're essentially, and again, 43 and 53, right? You could have made the field goal, but I don't know how it's Zach. If it's Aaron Rodgers, different story. Maybe you do decline it. But it's Zach freaking Wilson. You take that penalty, don't you, every time?
Man, I don't know. The opportunity to force him into fourth down, it's just, I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
What do you think about the Bills? Josh Allen, 3 picks, all by the way to Whitehead yesterday. So if you were voting on, let's say the NFL season stopped here and it was over, who's the NFL Defensive Player of the Year and who's the NFL MVP? Maybe it's Whitehead after 1 week. Apologies to Tua.
Did you catch that he cashed in on a season-long interception incentive?
Did he
really? $250,000 for three interceptions on the year.
He's never had three in a season before. Never had three in a season before. Talking about Jordan Whitehead. So 3 picks from Josh Allen, and of course, right after the Garrett Wilson touchdown to tie it up at 13-13 on 1st and 10, he fumbles the exchange, sort of recovers it, fumbles it again. Quinnen Williams pounces on it, and that's what allowed the Jets to go up a field goal. By the way, I thought the Jets played that sequence super conservatively, right above the 2-minute warning. Bills still had all 3 timeouts. They just go run. It was stop. And then the Bills needed the doinked-in field goal to force the overtime. But there was a lot of questionable stuff in this. By the way, Nick Wright trying to put context onto Josh Allen. Since week one of 2022, Josh Allen has played 19 games. He has 20 picks and 17 fumbles in those 19 games. That's 37 picks and fumbles in 19 games, averaging almost exactly 2 picks or fumbles a game. That's simply a fact that a lot of folks refuse to come to terms with.
It's incredible.
I mean, we don't want to overreact, but it's worth talking about. The Bills, even in their best days, are prone to strange performances. Now, the Jets' defense was great. So this ain't the Jaguars game from a couple years ago where they went into Jacksonville and lost 9-6.
Yeah.
Some of us lost in Survivor on that. Not that I remember, of course. But they're prone to games like this, too. But Are we at the point where the thought has crept into your head after last night? Was, has the window shut for this franchise? I know it's too soon to say, but, like, does the thought creep in?
Yeah. I don't know if window shut is the right phrasing, but it's more...
It's creaking.
It's more of, look at what this team's done the past couple years. You feel like you know this team and how high their ceiling is about as well as anybody in the NFL. And then you talk about more of a stacked AFC than what we're used to seeing. It's a team that I think will be good. I think they could still challenge for an AFC East title, but do I see them going far in the playoffs? No, not really.
Really?
Yeah.
You're prepared to say that?
No, I mean, I think AFC championship game would be best they could do.
The other thing that was, I want to just give it context again, Ed Werder on Twitter, Josh Allen is playing his 78th game tonight, he was saying. His third pick and lost fumble makes, what is that, 84? Is that right? 84 turnovers since the year 2018, most in the league. It just is.
Yep.
It just is.
You know what? It's the. I was kind of joking with you on text today, but you know what? It's the. We always want to talk about the NFL, sport or entertainment. He's an entertainment machine. He's just like when I talk about Jameis Winston. Whether this guy takes off with his legs or whether he's throwing the ball to his team or another team, we got an amazing game last night in part because of Josh Allen's terrible play. And like this is like he just creates entertainment sometimes, Gil, one way or the other.
Sacked five times. Running all over the place, jumping over folks. 29 of 41 for 236. 4 of 9, 3 picks on throws, 15 air yards downfield. I hurt my team tonight, he said. I cost my team tonight. Yeah, you did. Drew Dinsick. More on this at NFL Week 2 next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from the D, Bar Canada at the D, here at the downtown portion of this great city of Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. The other thing, Kelly, that people asked me about with the Rodgers injury, too, and not just me, but people are speculating, is this it for Aaron Rodgers? Is he done entirely as a career? And, you know, you think about, you know, other quarterbacks of the past, Joe Theismann famously with his leg broken in 1985, never coming back after that, never playing another down. You know, in those days, he was already an ancient quarterback in his mid-30s. Steve Young with his seventh concussion in the late 90s. Could he have come back? Sure, but you're dealing with a brain injury. Already won a Super Bowl like Theismann. Why bother? And this one with Aaron Rodgers. Could he come back physically? Yeah, sure. If you wait at least a year, maybe even longer than that, but let's just say it's a year, you know, could he? Yes. But is there any point, is there any practical point to a 40-year-old quarterback coming back from injury?
Right.
The answer is no.
Especially when it was a guy who was considering this anyways, right? Like, it's... And I don't mean to sound callous about it, but it was one of the thoughts that I had last night of like, well, this is an easy decision for him now, right? Like, after that kind of injury, you were trying to make a decision whether to continue with football or not anyways.
Yeah.
Like, it is – you had still had a great career, man. Everybody's going to remember you as a great quarterback and walk off into the sunset now.
Yeah.
It's, you gave it a shot, and I know it's got to be frustrating because of how much work he probably put in the past, you know, 5-6 months or what at a minimum. But, yeah, it's like you're talking about. The timeline to return from something like this at his age, it's just not worth it.
You've won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You're one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You're a Hall of Famer on the first ballot. There really is no point. And, you know, from a Jets standpoint, again, Xavier Gibson to the house on a punt return in overtime. Subject, he was one of the subjects focused on in Hard Knocks. It was a great story, you know, as drift from that show as well. And good on the Jets. But again, if you get to their next five games, we talked about their gauntlet of a schedule, the first six. Good on them for winning in their darkest moment last night. But it's at Dallas, where they're north of a touchdown underdog. It's going to be home New England, home Kansas City, at Denver, home Philadelphia. I said before the season, even with Rodgers, if you gave them a 3-3, if you gave them truth serum and you said, you're going to be 3-3, will you take it? I think the answer was unequivocally yes. If I gave you a 2-4 now, would you take it? And I think the answer is unequivocally
yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And who can they pick up that in any way moves the needle? There's nobody really out there.
There's really not.
There isn't.
Some of the names that were being thrown out,
Jameis
Winston, Andy Dalton. There's nothing that moves the needle.
I
love Jameis as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But that is just not a guy that's going to lead you to a Super Bowl. So,
yeah.
It is what it is.
Jemele Hill throwing out Colin Kaepernick. Are we going to do the Colin Kaepernick thing for the next 10 years?
Oh, boy.
Are we really doing that?
Did we really throw out? She threw out his name?
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess Zach Wilson gets another last chance, but it has to be looked at that way, right? Like you're riding with what you got on the roster. I don't really think there's anybody that you can bring in that you're confident is going to be that much better than what Zach Wilson is, and not that much worse than Aaron Rodgers. So you're actually going to win a Super Bowl out of it.
Yeah. Yep. It's tough. We have, the other thing is, as you look at this with the Jets just entirely from yesterday, that reminded me of the 1985 game where Joe Theismann broke his leg. Yes, Washington won that football game, but you knew it would never quite be the same. Now, the difference is that they won a Super Bowl with Theismann. Here he's played four plays for the Jets. But we've seen this before with older quarterbacks. And, there's a lot of people also talking about, the turf, right? I know Bakhtiari was all over – was it Bakhtiari who was all over Twitter yesterday?
It was everybody.
Everybody all over Twitter saying, it's the turf, it's the turf. Listen, again, with Achilles injuries, there's no way you can prove that it's the turf. Yes, it's primarily a basketball injury, and so that is hard courts. I did my second one on a tennis hard court. So, yeah, does the surface matter? Sure. Could it, if it were grass, could it have helped? Maybe. But there's no way to know this. This is the thing about Achilles injuries. And if it is, by the way, again, not confirmed yet, but if it is an Achilles injury, it's a very bizarre injury in the way that doctors can't really explain why, right? You can't anticipate it happening, and you can't really definitively explain why after the fact. And Dominique Wilkins, ruptured his Achilles. Maybe the greatest, there's no greater athlete than that. Dan Marino threw a pass, admired his pass, and fell to the turf. You just can't explain. And then there's a guy like Tony Gwynn. I was saying this to somebody last night. Tony Gwynn, who, let's say, for all of his amazing hitting prowess, right, maybe one of the great hitters of all time. Not maybe the greatest, but certainly one of the greatest. Not exactly a bastion of great physical, condition in his playing days. The late Tony Gwynn. But he had the benefit of having soreness down there. So if you're lucky enough to have that, you stretch a lot to alleviate it, right? There is obviously it's about, that can combat it. We know that, but we don't have any warning. Typically when you rupture your Achilles outright, you don't have any warning of any of it. And so that's the bizarre nature of it. And that's, again, why he was so confused last night, because he's like, what do you mean? I'm limping, but I'm in no pain whatsoever. Again, the body goes numb to protect you. So it's such a weird thing. So the people who are killing the fact that, it wasn't natural grass, maybe, but you can't prove that.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't. You can't with any of those injuries. And that's the – did you first start thinking about it when he kind of fell to the ground or sat back on the ground?
No. When he sat back, yes.
Yeah, okay.
When he first fell, I was like, his knee got wrenched or his ankle got wrenched.
Yeah.
Because it was a tackle. It was a sack.
I was as confused as Joe and Troy were at first, right? Because you're kind of like – they show the first replay and you're like – nothing bent weird, really.
Do you remember KD's expression, too?
No, exactly.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Just confusion. Yeah.
And then when he sat down, I was like, okay, this is weird. Like, something's up here.
When I did my first, I looked up at the ref. I was like, you didn't call a foul, because the guy kept trying to go around me and smack my heel and poke the ball out. And I looked up at the ref. I go, where's the foul? He goes, son, there was no one near you. I was like, what? You just can't explain it. Tennis, real quick, because we want to get this in. Before we get to all of our guests, I have three tennis picks. There's actually tournaments that do go on after the U.S. Open. Before I get to those, just a shout-out to Novak Djokovic for winning his 24th Grand Slam singles title, which he already had the record on the men's side. This matches Margaret Court on the ladies' side for the most of all time. He is the GOAT of all GOATs. There has never – I will stand by the statement that there has never been anybody like him in any sport. I've always said that Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer are better at tennis than any of us are at anything. Well, Djokovic now at 24, congratulations to him. He beats Daniil Medvedev on Sunday while we were all watching football. And then Coco Gauff. Kelly, ever seen a grown man cry? You ever seen a grown man
cry? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't have anything on Coco in this tournament. U.S. Open was a net loser for me. When she started crying, she beats Aryna Sabalenka, she starts bawling. I uncontrollably started to weep. Because there's something about, I still view her as a little girl, she's a grown woman, but something about seeing her cry like that with such emotion, involuntarily, tears coming out of my eyes. I could not have been happier for her. Coco Gauff wins her first slam. It was the summer of Coco. She won D.C. She won Cincinnati. She wins the U.S. Open. It's her first Grand Slam title. And tennis in 2024 on the women's side is going to be awesome because Naomi Osaka should be back. Her and Iga Swiatek have both won four slams. Nobody else has won more than one. Well, I shouldn't say that. Kvitova's won two back in the day. But of the young players coming up, nobody's won more than one. I do have three plays today in San Diego, Kelly, which I believe is a Wales. No?
Yeah, in German, right?
I got Leila Fernandez. These are all really closely lined matches, by the way. I do have Leila Fernandez, the Canadian, who was a U.S. Open finalist. You may remember from a couple years back where she lost to Emma Raducanu, famously. Leila Fernandez is minus 115 up against Beatrice Haddad-Maia, who has not been playing her best tennis lately. So I've got Fernandez at minus 115. Then Sophia Kennan, who you remember we had winning the Australian Open in 2020 on this show. She has fallen on a hard time since, and she's getting her game back together. Remember, she beat Coco at Wimbledon. I've got her at plus 118 against Veronika Kudermetova, who is out of form, not really playing well at all these days. And I've got Ekaterina Alexandrova at minus 103 against Yelena Ostapenko. Yelena Ostapenko had a good run at the U.S. Open, but I got Alexandrova based on data. So those are the three tennis plays in San Diego today. It's a 500 tournament. Not a slam, not a 1,000, but it's a 500. Pretty good field.
I was going to say, not a bad field.
Not a bad field at all. Like D.C. This is a better field than D.C. 500. So the picks again, Fernandez minus 115, Kennan plus 118, Alexandrova minus 103. And unlike most of the year where we were getting tremendous CLV and couldn't even make these plays in the morning, these are right around where I got them last night. All the picks for not only me, not only every VSiN host, but all of our VSiN guests at VSiN.com/picks. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick, Paul Spohr, Mark Borchard, and Pete Futak on college football. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSiN. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Carl Neufeld, he wants Tom Brady to come out of retirement. Carl, Tom Brady still has ownership in the Raiders, so that ain't happening.
Oh, I also saw one list with his name at the top. Yes, yeah. One list with his name at the top, then Jameis, then Andy Dalton.
Podiatron, Gil, do you think any of the players asked Rodgers for the football after the rupture? I do not. It's like, you know what that's a reference to? Todd asking for the tennis balls Gil, can I get those tennis balls? Trip Tepper, yep, you picked up on what I saw, talking about the declined penalty. Ryan Thompson, I said the same thing. They're afraid of Zach Wilson on 3rd and 23. I think you take that penalty every time, regardless of quarterback. I agree. Primetime, I know you have a close friend that played with the Ravens in the preseason. Is he still on the roster? And will he get some run-in games? Great question, Primetime. His name is Owen Wright. He's on the practice squad. The Ravens took Melvin Gordon off their practice squad, elevated him to replace J.K. Dobbins. So my guy would be next in line. I've begun to gather my things. Believes that I'm in front of a check-in and you're in front of a Chili's. He's not happy with that. David Shalafour, great call, Gil. I went to Twitter looking to see everyone killing Opie. He's referring to Sean McDermott, I believe. And not a mention, every snap from Wilson at that point was to your advantage. Crickets from Buck and Troy. Scotty B726, Colt McCoy if they want a game manager. That's his choice for quarterback. Trip Tepper said Jets should immediately sign Nathan Rourke off the Jags practice squad. He was very accurate in the CFL, 78.7% completion rate, and he's easy to acquire. Auburnus says pretty sure they discussed not accepting the penalty on the Manning cast. Oh, okay. They did on the Manning cast. And Paul M., he says, every time I see a shot of Kelly and the beer taps behind him, I have to do a double take making sure I'm not at some local pub football show. Yeah, we might be. You never know. Drew Dinsick joins us, ladies and gentlemen, through the magic of telephone. Alexander Graham Bell's fine invention. Drew, not the host of just one podcast, but of two. The Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports, Bet the Edge. How you doing, Drew? What's happening, man?
Oh, nothing bad. Just happy to have week one in the books. Happy to put the season to bed. I hope the end of the U.S. Open went well for you and all of the numbers game listeners. Football is back, ? It was a very uneven quality of play in week one.
And particularly Sunday morning, right, where it was like, oh my god, what are we, this really is week four of the preseason. Did you have a good week one betting wise?
Finished just ahead, but it was not an especially great week one. I think the decider for me was the under last night, and the fact that couldn't have gone over even if they had scored max points in overtime was a relief. And I think it was still the right side, even though it was obviously significantly influenced by the Aaron Rodgers injury. Mm-hmm. There's some questions swirling though about how I have the Bills power rated. No doubt about that.
How do you have them power rated? That's a great question to start here.
I had them as a top three team, and I got to tell you, the defense was where I was really kind of against market in terms of, I just really thought that this Bills defense as rostered was, a clear top five unit, and that they were going to have some opportunities to really throttle some bad offenses to start the season. And the tackling was poor. The guys were taking really unusual lines. There was like a whiff of aggressiveness, but it didn't ever really manifest much other than, when you had single passers just winning 1v1 against the bad offensive line. I thought some of the coverage was, it was good, but it wasn't like especially outstanding. And I think, the fact that they let the Jets back in, particularly that touchdown drive that ended with what was just a pretty, spectacular catch by Garrett Wilson. I can't really hold that against them, I suppose, but it definitely still felt like this Bills defense may not be in its final form yet. And then on the offensive side of the ball, whatever magic existed between Josh Allen and Brian Daboll apparently only lasted like 8 weeks into regular season last year, and now he is just a very different player. It's really tough to put wrap your head around why he finds it necessary to YOLO ball one every 10 plays. But if he was just kind of trying to play a little smaller, I feel like the Bills offense is probably a lot more efficient. I know exactly what's going on in that room, in that offensive room, in the QB room, but somebody presumably needs to talk to him about a regular season approach that gets the Bills, doesn't put the Bills in a position where they're losing to Zach Wilson.
Yeah, you bring up this thing about Josh Allen. Obviously, the knock on him coming out of Wyoming was he was inaccurate. And before Josh Allen, the only real truism we could say about, projecting quarterbacks, Dr. Bob used to say this all the time, accuracy is the only thing you can really project. Otherwise, it's, a lot of moving parts. And Josh Allen bucked that. Do you think we're going to look back years from now and say that the accurate, the Daboll half year, as you call it, was the anomaly, and that won't return at any point?
I mean, it just feels like it's not in his DNA. I don't know. It's because it's not even really an accuracy thing that I could tell you.
It's just much a gunslinging, more of just a gunslinging thing.
Yes, that's exactly it. He's a gunslinger. And if you were to put like two accomplished quarterbacks, I guess comp isn't the right word, but like just two quarterbacks that are performing well in their starting tenures, on the absolute opposite end of the spectrums, it's like, okay, well, here's Brock Purdy with the Niners. The Niners are scheming guys wide open. He's making the correct decision every time. He's not forcing things. He's got a noodle for an arm, but it doesn't matter. And then on the other side, here's Josh Allen. He's an absolute monster of a human being. His arm is a freaking cannon, and he's trying to force every throw into a super tight window. You know, he's not anticipating defenders. He's, you know, defenses are reading his, you know, reading his reads, reading his eyes. And every once in a while, like, it feels like he's trying to speed the things up too much. And, you know, he bobbles the snap. He, you know, he doesn't slide when he should be getting down. And
he definitely doesn't, you know, do I think, that. Yeah. He definitely,
yeah. I mean, like, yeah. He's putting yourself in harm's way week one is nonsense. And just in general, like, it feels like the game needs to slow down for him a little bit, and he's trying to do a little bit too much. And, you know, I don't know if that will ever happen, because, you know, what makes him exciting to watch, what makes him a fun player to you know, to see on the field is a lot of this stuff, you know, gunslinger mentality we're talking about. And, you know, I don't know that you change that.
AFC East, Dolphins at DraftKings +135, Bills +145, Jets 6-1 now, Patriots 9-1. Does that sound right to you, generally?
Man, if I was going to swing in the AFC East right now, I'd probably Patriots. As insane as that sounds, saying it out loud. The Patriots have the best defense out of those teams, even with tremendous regard for how good the Jets defense is. The fact that the Patriots showed some sign of life on offense, I think pretty solid sign, and I think you got the best coach there. So Dolphins, to me, I think are fine to be priced where they are right now. But I worry a bit about it's only going to take one hit and Tua is done for the season. And then, you know, and then you're riding that future with Mike White. So best of luck.
Boy, the Jets, and the Jets wish they were riding their future with Michael White right now.
Yeah, I know, right?
They do. Real quick, because we only have 90 seconds. What did you bet so far in week two, Drew?
I don't have a ton on my card yet. I'm keeping a close eye on this Chargers game. I think the Chargers are the right side. I'm surprised market is coming down. I agree with Circa being out at -3.5 on that one. So yeah, Chargers are going to be Chargers are going to make it for me. I'm waiting as long as I can before betting into Atlanta money line. And then the other sides that popped for me were the New York Giants and the Chicago Bears. So hold my nose and take some absolute road teams that are coming off some horrific performances. It's kind of the nature of my week, it looks like.
Kelly and I had the same reaction on guessing lines yesterday to the Chargers line. Yeah. What do you make of that even being even that low, even 3.5? I get it. The hook is more in line with what we're thinking. But the threes, what do you make of that against the Titans?
I mean, it sounds like Austin. I mean, the Chargers defense graded extremely poorly, but I'd put more of that on Mike McDaniel. I think people are a little people are concerned that Austin Ekeler may not go. I think that's probably a good thing. The Titans are full. If you take the running plays out of Kellen Moore's playbook, I think the Chargers offense probably has a better day. I think realistically, Tennessee's offense, their issues go so deep. I'm really, really not expecting them to have a bounce back turnaround. And people may be looking at 2 years ago as a sample and saying, hey, man, they were awful week one. Lost to the Arizona Cardinals, and then they bounce back on the road week two and beat the Seahawks. Well, this Tennessee team and this Ryan Tannehill is not that guy. So I think things are quite bleak with this Titans offense.
Yeah. Drew, appreciate it as always, man. Great checking in with you.
All right. Best luck, guys.
Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper on the old Twitter machine. We haven't had a chance to talk baseball yet. We'll do that with Paul Sporer on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Network.
Football's back in full swing with another week of epic games. And who's got you covered on the action for every single one of them? Well, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can get $5 on football, or can bet, rather, $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use code VEGAS to sign up. New customers can bet just $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code Vegas. The crown is yours. Kelly, I have a fly who is attacking me here at the D.
Yeah, there's we got to name him. Bill? Buddy?
I'm getting ready.
Buddy the fly?
I'm getting ready to give him these headphones. let it do the show.
He's been either with you or me like every day since we've been down
here. He loves us. I feel like Pigpen and Peanuts. It's my favorite character.
We always like to take people behind the scenes, right?
Sure.
So a classic, if you usually ever see one of our hosts going like that or something, there's usually something wrong with whatever we're broadcasting. If you see me or Gil doing it, no, we're just waving a fly away. So I've had to explain that to the crew as well.
Oh, man. We haven't had a chance to talk because football obviously takes over. The NFL is king, college football right behind it. But baseball is just spectacular right now. Anywhere between 17 to 19 games left on the season, depending on what club you're talking about. And the race for the wild card spots, the final wild card spots in both the American League and National League are awesome. Paul Sporer joins us from Fangraphs to discuss, of course, host of the Sleeper in the Bus podcast as well. How you doing, Paulie, man? Good to talk to you.
Morning, Gil. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Giants have won 4 in a row. Here's what happened, Paulie. I flew to San Francisco Friday. I had a good talking to with the team, and they haven't lost since. That's what I'm going with. 4 in a row, baby.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always show faith in them. So I think there is something to that.
Something to that. All right, American League, let's start there. Three teams vying for two playoff spots. Now that the Astros have gotten themselves some distance in the American League West, and by some distance, I mean two entire games ahead of the Rangers, 2.5 in front of the Mariners. But as far as where the standings are right now, you have the Blue Jays, who are a half game up, currently inhabiting the number two wild card spot in the American League. The Rangers, who currently inhabit the number three, and the Mariners a half game behind them. So three teams within one game of each other. Only two of those three can get number two and number three. Who is the team that is going to be on the outside looking in?
That's a really tough one. I'm mostly rooting than it is like a firm belief that this is going to happen. But I'm going for the triple out west situation with Texas and Houston, all three of them making it, which I think would, of course, push Toronto on to the outside there. And again, it is so close that I'm not overly definitive on that. But when I stack up these teams, I still have love for Texas, even though they were swooning for a while. They're now back on a win three. I know Seattle's on a lose four, but I still love their pitching coming down the stretch. In Toronto, I don't know. I just don't get the warmties with them. So I got them on the outside looking in.
Yeah, Toronto of the three teams has the toughest schedule. Toronto, a .548 aggregate win percentage for the remaining opponents, followed by Texas at .518 and Seattle at .514. So all three really top 11.
What's Seattle's?
514. 514. Okay. The big thing, though, is that Texas and Seattle play each other seven more times.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost half the remaining
Houston
schedule.
Houston is in that. So, yeah, they hold their own destiny, Seattle does, it, but in a difficult, because all they've got is a three-game reprieve at Oakland, middle of the month here. And other than that, it's pretty tough. I mean, they got two more here against the Angels. Losing was tough. They got to take these next two because then they got the Dodgers, the Oakland reprieve, and then the seven with Texas that you mentioned, and three with Houston in between that. So Seattle's really got a tough road ahead of them. But again, that's where their pitching comes through. I think that they can handle it, and they'll be in control of their own destiny there, and that's why I do have them eventually beating out Toronto.
All right, National League. It's four teams playing for one. It's really five teams playing for two. The Cubs only have a two-game lead over the Diamondbacks. Cubs currently inhabit the number two wild card position, but let's throw them out for a second. Let's say they get in along with the Phillies, who are number one. It's the D-backs, Giants, Marlins, and Reds, two games apart from each other for that final spot, with the Diamondbacks and Giants both controlling their own destiny right now. The D-backs with a one-game better situation right now in the loss column. They have 69 wins. The Giants and Marlins both have 70. Who is the team that makes it from that bunch? I'll ask it the other way. Did we lose Paulie? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going with the D-backs on that one. This team, you know, I've been in on from the jump from the preseason area. You know, they've had their ups and downs. I still like this ball club a lot. The Miami pitching is nice, but do they have enough hitting? I'm not sure. Those young guys hold up down the stretch here. You know, I've always been a bit unkind to your Giants. I know they're on a win four. Maybe I just need to get on the far hand platoon train here because he makes it work with a bunch of no names. And then Cincy, as much as I loved what they've done and I love their future, they simply don't have enough pitching. You know, they're pushing Andrew Abbott back to save his innings a little bit. I get it with him coming down the stretch here. And they've just hemorrhaged a couple pitchers. Lodolo never came back. I just don't think that they're going to have enough this year in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing stretch. And again, a big two-game set, or what's looking like it's going to be a huge two-game set next week between the Diamondbacks and the Giants. Right now, the Giants one game up in a potential tiebreaker. Those two games will determine ultimately who would win a tiebreaker between those two teams, if in fact comes down to just those two teams. The Giants would need one of those two to earn the tiebreaker. The Diamondbacks would have to win both of those. Okay, what do you like in baseball today, DFS-wise?
Part again, I'm sorry, Gil.
DFS-wise, what do you like on the slate today, Paul?
As far as today's slate, sorry about that. I caught the internet hiccup there right at the worst possible moment.
No problem, not your fault.
You know, I'm looking at Nick Pivetta with the Red Sox. You know, I've been really interested in what he's been doing down the stretch. I know it's a decent number at minus 165, but I like this Boston club. I just got done giving the Reds a little bit of a tough time, but I like them as a road favorite, minus 120 at my Tigers. Brandon Williamson, he's doing all he can for that pitching. You know, he himself cannot do everything, but I do like him there with the Reds in Detroit. And then the Blue Jays as a home dog against the Rangers. I'm just a little bit nervous about Scherzer right now. It's hard to ever go against him, but I don't know how you trust him right now, and Hyunjin Ryu's been amazing. So I did get done propping up the Rangers a bit for the long term. I think today they could be against the Jays.
Yeah, baseball. I mean, baseball. Here's it. I mean, we're all football crazy, but there is. I mean, for those of us who still love the sport of baseball, it is still one of the more incredible things. You know, literally at the end of Sunday football, Chris Felica texted me. He goes, "Did you see what happened to the Yankees today? No hit for 10 1/3 innings,
insane.
And they win. Insane! It's like
insane.
It's incredible. You still see things that you've never seen before in baseball. And then last night, the A's inexplicably just dominating the Astros out of nowhere, as well. So all kinds of things. And then you have a Yankees Red Sox series, which by the way got postponed yesterday as a doubleheader today, which is probably like has the least interest of any recent Yankees Red Sox series this late in the season that I can remember. So it's just fascinating on so many levels. Paul, always.
It really is. It's been a great season.
Yeah. Real quick before you go, because I'm contractually obligated to ask you, obviously with Mookie Betts' injury, it looks like Acuna, and he's minus 700 now to win NL MVP. So that appears to be fait accompli. NL Cy Young, who's your guy now?
Say the last part. I heard the part about Betts' injury. What was the last part?
NL Cy Young, who do you believe wins it now as we sit currently?
I mean, I'm looking at Snell getting his second. I think he's really got a great shot. I know all the stuff that Strider's done with like the advanced stats. If right electorate of advanced stats folks, maybe, but I'm on Steele and Snell right now. Steele's probably my favorite in the clubhouse, and Snell aggressively chasing him as well.
Yeah. Paul, appreciate it as always. Thank you. So apologize for the connection, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Gil.
At Sporer, everybody, Sporer on the old Twitter machine. And by the way, NL Cy Young, because we've talked about it so often, and I had Strider. Strider's 70 or 75-1.
Yeah.
He would need like a no-hitter tomorrow to jump back into the fray.
Yeah, we already declared those tickets dead,
pretty much. Yeah, we did. Right now, Blake Snell minus 220, Justin Steele plus 150, and Zach Gallen is actually shorter, much shorter than Strider, as is Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
By the way,
8-1 Gallen.
Yeah, but you can't win a Cy Young with a 3.83 ERA. You can't.
Would it not be Steele for you right now? Just when we've been having all these conversations, you know I'm not the biggest baseball guy, but like,
listen, Snell had the Astros. That was the one he was supposed to blow up. He didn't.
Yeah.
I made the point about if you're betting on it as a pitching MVP, And again, I'll say it again. Snell just made the Padres suck less.
Right.
You could make the argument Steele put the Cubs in the playoffs. Without him, they don't make the postseason. So, on that, in that respect, it's a Steele thing. But Snell, Houdini, high walk rate, highest, lowest ERA, a feat that hasn't been accomplished since 1913. College football guessing lines next.